Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Woj Pod. My guest today in New York, Toronto Raptors All-Star DeMar DeRozan. We've been doing the pod for a couple of years, maybe 100 or so, give or take, shows. And this visit with DeMar rates right up among my personal favorites. DeMar was engaging and thoughtful, illuminating on a lot of things, and just really one of my favorite conversations here. DeMar talked about going most of his first year with Kyle Lowry in Toronto, and the two of them saying and interacting very little with each other. DeMar talked about how close he once came to asking for a trade out of Toronto. We talked about what true leadership means in the NBA, about his obsessive pursuit of greatness and the price that needs to be paid. And we get deep into his childhood in Compton, California, about internalizing a childhood of witnessing a lot of senseless gang violence and murder and how you carry that with you as a grown man. And we talk about why it's been so important to him that in 8+ years in the league, he's never been late for a practice, a meeting, a game, an appearance, a bus, a plane. We talked about a lot. Here's my visit with Raptors All-Star DeMar DeRozan. Here with DeMar in New York on an off day, two off days in New York, DeMar. Are there any, as cities go, is this, if you're going to have 2 days off, is this the place to do it?
Most definitely, but just not in this weather.
We might as well be in Toronto.
Yeah, for sure. Not in this weather.
I feel like the coldest I've ever been was All-Star Weekend in Toronto.
Me too.
Right?
Yeah.
Which was going to be Masai. That was going to be his big recruiting weekend for future free agents, and it was like the Arctic. But the last week, 10 days, it's been comparable to that.
Yeah, it's been that All-Star Weekend. I haven't, my years of being in Toronto, I never felt it that cold. But, you know, this last few days, it's been up there.
Did you guys take a lot of heat from players that weekend?
Yeah, in your town?
You were the host.
Yeah, for sure. People, everything else was great, but everybody complaining about the weather. Everybody, and even me, because I was telling everybody, like, it's never like this. Because the week prior to it, it was nice. It was actually nice. Like, I'm like, all right, if next week like this during All-Star Weekend, this go down. It's history. It's one of the best All-Star Weekends, and I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, listen, the bottom line still was you and Kyle Lowry got to have an All-Star Weekend in your city at home in Toronto, which was great. I mean, that was a thing for you guys, but this year, you got another – now you really have a chance to go home for All-Star, having one in L.A. Have you been sort of targeting that one to have a chance to go back home and be in an All-Star game?
I it's crazy when I see it. I never think about it, but when I see it or it's mentioned, and then you see the whole L.A., you know, the L.A. All-Star Weekend bang, and, you know, you kind of get – you know, you kind of feel like a kid all over again, you know, to have that honor to be able to play at home in a big game. I remember I played in a sophomore game my second year in L.A. Mm-hmm. and did a dunk contest. But, you know, to play in that big game, and, you know, it's always great. And to do it in L.A. would be crazy.
What's the difference? Like, you look back now, because you've been to the All-Star game as an All-Star 3 times. And then when you're a young player, a lot of guys get into the rookie sophomore game. What's it like being like a young guy going? Because you're at All-Star Weekend, but you're not really right?
Yeah. Man, and it's crazy. That's a great question because, you know, when you think about it, you feel like you everything, the rookie sophomore. You know, you feel like, oh, I'm part of All-Star Weekend, I'm this. You know, you with all your friends that you came up playing basketball with, that you got drafted with, and y'all playing in this game. And, you know, you play Friday night, you know, and you realize, you know, the big game is Sunday. And you like, damn, did we really just play? Like, what was this? You know what I mean? You want to be a part of that big game. So to be a part of that big game and you get it from that side of it's definitely crazy, man. It's an honor just to be a part of it. But once you play in the big game with the great players in this league, it's definitely awesome.
What was the first All-Star game you remember as a kid, or when you started to pay attention to All-Star games?
Man, I'm when I was a kid, my dad recorded every single All-Star weekend for me. Even when we didn't have cable, he'd go to a friend's house, record it, and bring it back home, show me on VHS tape. Like, that's how locked in and All-Star weekend I used to be, you know, every dunk contest, everything. And I think one, I forgot, what was one, man, that really stuck out to me. I forgot what year it was. It was probably, was it 94 when it was in San Antonio? What year? I can't think of the year. But it was in San Antonio, and they wore them colorful jerseys.
Right. Yeah, like the lime. Yeah. It was like a lime.
Yeah. And I remember watching that, and you seeing all the greats out there. Like, and it was one of the moments to where, like, your dream really kick in as a kid. Like, man, this would be so cool to do this and, you know, put on an All-Star jersey. And All-Star weekend was everything for me when I was a kid, being able to watch it and, you know, to be part of it. I remember my first year in New Orleans, being a part of it. You know, I had that same exact feeling I had when I was a kid watching All-Star weekend. So it's crazy.
Where do you feel? Is it when you go in the locker room, you put the jersey on? Is it when you're checking in the game? When does it, like, hit you that I'm among these guys?
As soon as you find out.
Okay.
The weeks prior to it, like, you see your name in it, and, you know, you kind of walk differently the next day. You know, seeing your name on that roster, and, you know, leading up to it, you know, I have to say that moment really kicks in when, you know, you get your name announced. You know, when they announce the reserves, the starters and everything out there in the arena. You know, that's one of the moments to where, you know, you look around and you say, I can't believe, you know, you can't believe it, you know. So it's definitely crazy.
They made changes this year with how the team will be selected the same, but the group, the voting process is essentially the same. But having the two top vote getters be captains and then pick the teams, did something have to change? Could they have just left it alone?
I think something had to change. You know, I know a lot of people not sure how it's going to go, how it's going to work. You know, you got to give it a chance. You know, it could be a great idea, you know, and it could be something to where instead of, you know, you getting two conferences, you get a mixture of guys that are All-Stars out there playing together. And, you know, you don't know how it turn out. You know, we'll see next month. You know, I think it'd be a cool thing. People just not used to it, you know. But I think it could be something interesting.
We were talking a little bit before we came on about, I had been telling the story about we're on the west side here in New York, and I was actually out on a street near this hotel when I had gotten word about Kyle Lowry maybe getting traded to the Knicks five or six years ago.
Yeah.
Right when Masai had taken over that year. And that trade got pretty close. And then New York, the guy reported something in the afternoon, and then the Knicks kind of eventually, over the course of the day, backed out. I think Kyle literally had his bags packed in Toronto. I think he was open to the trade in New York. And there was a feeling of, like, the team had gotten off to a pretty good start, which I think in their minds initially was, well, Kyle's value's up, maybe DeMar's value's up, and then we'll start a rebuild. There was a walk-up to that whole trade scenario. There were other teams. There had been a lot of talks with a lot of teams with Kyle. What do you remember about that time and how close really you guys came to all the success you've had together never happening?
I remember that moment vividly, that whole season, because the start of the season, I remember we set a goal out for ourselves of understanding. You know, we kind of had a feel what was going to happen if things were wrong. And we told ourselves, we had 20 games to figure it out. We had 20 games. And we ended up, I want to say, 6-12 when we made the Rudy trade, when we traded Rudy. And we was in L.A. And I remember once that trade happened, I said, you know, it's everybody get ready. Like, you know, it could go. I made this metaphor. I never forget. I said, we got two options, either sink or swim. And either we're going to be Michael Phelps or somebody with ankle weights on our ankles sinking. So I remember Cal, a couple of days later, Cal was practically gone. I remember Cal came in the locker room and said, man, it was nice playing with you. Man, I'm out of here. I'm done. I'm going to New York. And I remember my frustration came in, too. Like, man, I'm not trying to go through this again. I don't want to be one of them players that never make the playoffs. I'm 5 years in. Man, if you're getting traded, too, I'm going to ask for a trade, too. You know, I'm going to ask, too. And I remember we won some big game. Won another game. A couple days went by, and we was like, man, let's just give it all. Until somebody get traded.
Right.
Next thing you know, we done went on a week great run. I think we only lost to, like, San Antonio on the West Coast swing. You know, we went to Oklahoma, beat Oklahoma City. We was beating some pretty good teams. And, you know, after that, we just took off and ran with it. And, you know, we won our division. We played a veteran Brooklyn team, took them to 7-game series. And, you know, that whole season – the edge that we was playing with was incredible, man, and it made it fun, you know. So it was a moment of us really standing tall and fighting through all the adversity.
What did you think of Kyle when he got traded there? What did you know about him? What was it like at the beginning with him?
I don't think I never said this publicly, but he'll tell you. My first year with Kyle, me and Kyle didn't say a word to one another. We didn't speak. We didn't have a conversation. We didn't hang out. We didn't go eat. We didn't sit next to each other. Nothing. I didn't have his phone number. Nothing. You know, he came in and, you know, I don't know what it was like. If he knew he was just going to be moved again or if he was just a piece. You know, it was games that Cal didn't play. You know, he was playing behind, you know, Jose Calderon. And it was moments he really didn't touch the floor. And I didn't have a relationship with him like that at all, you know. So the next year come and, you know, all the madness happened. And I think that's what brought us together, why we so close like we are today, was that 2 weeks of a season that depicted our careers to be sitting here to the day, being multiple All-Stars, to being Olympians and everything. So when you think about it, you know, it's an amazing way how it went, how we became close.
Had you tried, or did he try in that first year to sort of reach out and say, let's, or you just kept apart? You just kept your distance?
No, he kept his distance from everybody, everything. You know, like, he really had the mindset coming in, like, you know, I'm not going to be here long. Let me just, it was crazy. It was one of them interesting situations, you know, like, and to see how far it came from then, you know, it's definitely incredible.
You know, I think management said, I think I remember Jeff Weltman told me this once, who had been, was the GM once Masai became president in Toronto, and now he's in Orlando, was talking about when you talked about when that team started to win and the group started to look like it fit better together, especially after the Rudy trade and you got more pieces and maybe it balanced the roster out a little bit, that they said, we were imagining the team that we wanted and how they would play and what they would look like. And, like, when we're thinking about doing these, making these big changes, we're looking going, maybe this is the team we imagined. And that's the hardest part, I think, is to sort of keep an open mind about, like, Kyle had been a difficult guy in a lot of places. He hadn't shown an ability to do what he's done the last few years. Everybody knew the talent was there. I mean, there were questions on everybody. And all of a sudden, like, did the players start to feel like that, where you felt like, I don't know, maybe it's not a great mix of players. And all of a sudden, as you're winning, you go, maybe this is different than we all imagined it could be, right?
Yeah, I think, first of all, we had a great group of guys before anything. Like, the energy of the guys that we had in the locker room was incredible, you know, and since then we always had a great locker room full of guys. And, you know, I think that played a big part in our success then and even now, was the camaraderie that we had and into pulling together in the toughest times, you know. Everybody was positive. Everybody was pulling for one another. And, you know, that confidence started to build within each other. And it showed.
And I don't know if you've gotten enough credit for this through the years, that when you think of star players of the league, there's always different – there are different controversies. There are different times guys might go off on something, create some waves, be frustrated publicly with this or that. You have kept a very consistent disposition in the league. you know, I asked Masai about, before we sat down, about, you know, something maybe I wouldn't think of. And he said, you know, in 8+ years in the team, he said, you've never been late, never late for anything, never late for a practice, for a meeting, for a bus, for a plane, whatever. Never once. And the only other person, Monty Williams told me that about Duncan, you know, over how many years? Like 18.
Yeah.
What is it about that maybe eventually the organization, the team took on your personality? Because you bring people together. You get along with people. And I think it kind of became the personality of the larger organization.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's crazy. It's crazy. I used to be in denial about it when I was young because I was like, you know, I'm just being myself. You know, I'm not trying to be a way and nobody trying to force me to be a certain way. You know, I was just always being myself. But as I got older, I started to realize, like, you know, I always wanted my work ethic to speak for itself. You know, the way, you know, I'm never late for anything. You know, to give the young guys no excuses why you should be late, no matter what, bus, everything, you know. And that's just my aura I try to share with everybody that, you know, keep us in a great mood, you know what I mean? No matter how rough things get, you know, I continue to stay the same way. You know, I think throughout my lifetime, I always was taught to never get too high, never get too low, in no situation, you know, and I carry that over, you know, to my job every single day, you know, and you know, my teammates, it's been great. You know, they helped me, and, you know, I go in there trying to make our job easy as possible. You know, and it's not me trying. It's just me genuinely doing it. And everything that I do since I've been with the Raptors has been genuine.
What do you know about leadership at, say, 28 that you didn't know at 20 about what leadership should be or is in the NBA? I think sometimes people think it's, like, is it big pep talks and it's yelling at guys for show sometimes. It isn't necessarily any of that. Like, what have you learned it is?
I learned it is not having a big bark with no bite. Meaning, for me, I never say much. I never say anything, but everything I do speaks volumes. And it's clear as day, you know, everything that I do, from my work ethic to, you know, being coachable to, you know, being in the toughest of situations and, you know, standing tall in it. You know, I do things the obvious way to where anybody else who see it will want to follow that same direction. And for me, that's my leadership, that I've learned how to explore that in the sense of not shy away from it. You know, when I was young, I used to, you know, I got to go to the gym. What time I got to be there? I got to do this, to where it's now like, you know, we're in the gym at this time, at every day, or, you know, I work out. I had, like, for example, I had Norman Powell with me a lot this summer, and I told him my workout, I get up at 4:15 every morning to go work out. You're more than welcome to come. In the discipline that he see that I'm never late. I'm going to work no matter how late I'm up at night. Mm-hmm. That's not an excuse. I'm going to be there at 4:30 for us to go lift weights and go to the gym. You know, and that's the leadership that's shown instead of talking and everything. I think that's what works so well with me and Cal, because Cal is the talker. He's the talker. I've always been, you know, the muscle behind everything,
right?
You know, so, and I love it, you know, and that's just my personality with everything. I'm the shore. I'm the doer. I don't know how to put words together to give a good pep talk. I just don't know how, you know, but everything else, I know how to do it the right way.
That personality of sort of, like you said, staying even and being really consistent every day. When you grew up the way you did, where you saw a lot of senseless violence, a lot of gang murders, did your environment, you think, help give you that personality? Or did you have that and that helped get you through it? Or is it both?
100%. You put it out there as clear as day, gave me that 100%. The way that I had to, you know, make it every single day growing up, man, it was so rough for me, to where you're going to see some things that you don't want to see, but you can't let that affect you from having to walk to school the next day. You're going to have to get to school if you want to you know, learn, or if you want to go play basketball, you have to do this. You know, you can't be scared. You can't be timid. You got to continue to do whatever it is you need to do, you know. And the way I grew up, the way I was raised, everything definitely taught me that, what gave me that type of mindset that I carry over today. And today is a lot easier compared to when I was growing up. And I keep that. And I tell myself that all the time. Like, you know, this is, you could get through anything at this stage of your life because you made it through, you know, 19 years of the things that you had to make it through.
You think, look back at the courage it took a lot of mornings to get up and walk down a street that you saw something horrific in the night before, that you appreciate better now than you even understood then?
Without a doubt. You never realize in your darkest days later on how beautiful they really are, because I don't understand how I did it, but that was the only choice that I had. You know, that was the only choice that I had to to make it out, was to push through it. Now I tell everybody today, you know, you got to go through it to get to it. You know, and that was always my mindset, and I carry that over to today. And you know, when I sit, you know, like for example, you know, it's not a day that I go by when I don't think about it. Flying in New York the other night, you know, looking over the city, you think about them same moments. Being in Compton, now you flying in New York, a place you never thought you would be, getting ready for a game.
All the road trips you've had in your career, all the flights, you still think about that when you land in a place?
No question. No question. Every single place I go, every time I walk off the court, every time I walk on the court, it's a thing that I do. I never even talked about this. The thing I do before I walk on the court, every game, I knock on wood. I knock on the wood. Not to say I'm superstitious or anything, but more so of, like, is this real? Like, I'm knocking on this to make sure it's real, because I get that feeling every time I walk out there on the court. And I think that's, you know, when you see me continue to get better, continue to do things, it's because I still have that appreciation, you know, like it was my first.
Support for the Woj Pod comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time and make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Woj. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. The way your game has evolved, I mean, you were the 9th pick in the draft. A lot of all-stars come out of the lottery, but I mean, when you did that 4-year, $40 million first extension, mm-hmm. Remember people going, holy cow, I can't believe they paid DeMar DeRozan 4 years. You know, it was about 10 a year, right?
Yeah.
There was a lot of right?
Yeah,
you took a lot of heat for that deal.
It was brutal. It was brutal, for sure.
You felt it?
Yeah, I did. And I didn't understand it. I didn't understand it. I remember that was the first time in my career when, like, something really kind of, like, you know, bothered me in a sense of, like, I didn't understand it. Like, damn, you don't think I'm good enough? You don't think I'm this? Like, it's, like, I didn't understand it, you know, but it gave me that extra push of, man, I'm going to make people understand this, man. Like, I don't get it. Like, I feel like I worked my butt off for it. Now I got to show it even more, you know, and that's the thing that pushed me. You know, I never relaxed when I got a dollar. I always, like, no, I'm going to show people why. Like, you know, and that was my mindset.
You've been methodical in how you've gotten better. Like, Bird and Magic and that group would always say, like, every summer – they'd come back with something new in their game. That was the first time I'd ever heard anyone talk about that, right? Like, they'd come back with something new. You'd bring something back. And you always talk about sort of being a throwback. But that's what you've done in the mm-hmm. NBA. Like, every year, this year now, shooting the three ball better. You know, you're always maybe the best mid-range guy in the league. Now shooting the three ball better, you have a 52-point game on New Year's, and everything's better. Like, you just, you've seen it systematically get better through the years. Who taught you to work on your game? Like, where did you learn to be? Because a lot of guys can put time in and not get better because they're not always working on the right things. Where did you learn how to work on your game?
I think it's a combination of people, things in my life. I study the game so much, you know, and I'm so meticulous with, you know, with life, you know, and I always compare, you know, life to like basketball in a sense to, you know, at some point in your life, no matter how smart you are, no matter how good you are at something, it's something else that you could put your energy to and add a characteristic to you that'll make you better. You know, I applied that to basketball. You know, I always listen to the things my mom and dad used to say to me when I was young, like, yeah, you good at this, but why you won't do this? And, you know, as a kid, you come up with an excuse, because I don't like that. I just want to do this. This is one thing that I'm comfortable with, you know. And as I got older, I started to realize, like, you know, let me try this. I remember asking my dad when I was young, why can't I jump off my right leg like I do my left leg? I didn't understand it. Or why I could shoot my right hand, but when I try to shoot my left, it's like this. Or I always used to ask my dad little things like that, and he always used to tell me, like, just work on it. You'll get better at it. Just work on it. You're so comfortable doing this off your left leg because you're right-handed. And I start working on things. It's just like, for example, I remember I asked him why I could kick a basketball farther with my right leg than if I try to kick it with my left leg. But I jump off my left leg, but,
right.
You know, I always like, work on it. He always used to tell me, work on it, work on it, work on it, try this, work on this. And I keep that same mentality with everything in life. Like, I always try to figure out how to do something because I love the challenge of, let me walk up to a piano and try to play a song. All right, 8 months later after I've been practicing, now I got it. You know, the satisfaction that I get from that is worth more than the frustration you get from that 8 months of learning how to do it. And I carry that over with basketball.
What have you learned to do in your adult life you never would have imagined as a kid that you would have spent time on?
So many things, man. Like, I sit back and realize and I surprise myself with so many things that I'm knowledgeable about. You know, to sit and have conversations about certain things I never in my life thought I'd be having a conversation about. You know, it could be from, you know, it could be from something as simple as clothes to talking about different, you know, continents you've been to, you know, seeing different things, seeing, you know, the wonders of the world, you know, being able to experience it, to tell you about it, to speak on it, about things you've seen in books as a kid that you didn't believe exist, you know, things like that I look at to this day. And, you know, having kids, I stress to them, learn this, to do this, because if I was a kid, you know, I wish I would have did this then, you know, but daddy just now learning this. So it's so many things, just the whole world, honestly, man.
In talking about that work and like how you've elevated your game, I think everyone considers you're a star in the league. You're a three-time All-Star. You're in the prime of your career. Is there another peak on the mountain? Is there one more? Like, are you almost to the top in terms of like where you look at your craft and where you are with your peers, that there's maybe just one level above where you are?
I feel like it's so much more that I have to give and to learn and teach myself that, you know, I get mad at the end of a lot of summers because I walk away from the summers like, man, it's a few other things that I wanted to, you know, get down pat. I wanted to, but it wasn't enough time in the summer for me to put it all together. So let me try to figure it out as the season go on. But next summer, I'm definitely going to do this. So for me, I feel I don't never put a limit on it. How cliche it sounds, I never put a limit on anything because that's what helps me continue to get better every summer, because I know it's so many things that I have to offer that I haven't even put into use yet.
Does playing for the Olympic team, playing USA basketball, being around that group for an extended period, does it change the way you look at yourself, you look at the game? Is it pretty unique?
It's so unique because, for me, it was a lot of things in my career I didn't want to do outside of basketball until I solidified myself on the court, because basketball is my love, my first passion, and I wanted to feel like I belong to sit in a room with a certain type of player or be around a certain individuals. I just didn't want to be around you because I'm in the NBA. I want to be able to, you know, be requested by you to sit down and have this podcast. You know what I mean? Because it's an honor. You know, you just don't want to be Joe Blow sitting here having a conversation with you. You know, I want to feel like I belong. And for me, that's been my whole career. And being a part of that team, making that team, being around them guys, hearing them guys cheer for you, hearing them guys tell you, man, I'm going to take that move from you. I'm going to do it. Like, that's what it's all about. That's what it's about. That's what you worked your butt off so hard for, to be accepted by the hierarchy of your peers and feel like you belong. So definitely the USA team was that.
Doug Smith, who's a longtime Raptors beat writer for the Star, did a piece the other day about declaring you the greatest Raptor in history, that you had surpassed Vince Carter, and he made a real compelling case. Vince, in a lot of ways, certainly put basketball on the map in Canada and impacted it in a way because of when he came along. Does that have value to you to come into a place? Vince never won like you did, and will you think about not just the numbers you've put up in Toronto, and you look at the career, but just how the organization, the winning has just grown and grown. Now you're 27-10, you're in second in the East. Is that important for a player to be able to do it in one place and to do it in a place where a lot of your winning is the first? No, you hadn't won a series before.
Yeah.
You're doing things no one else had done there.
Yeah. For me, it is. You know, that I've been taking that route my whole life. I went to Compton High School, where I could have went to, you know, any big school. Like, at the time, Dominguez High School was a big school in Compton. You know, I could have went there and won because they've been winning. You know, I remember I could have went to Oak Hill. I could have did all them things. But for me, I was like, I'm going to just go to Compton High. I'm from Compton. It's walking distance from my home. They never won anything. They never did anything since the 60s, 70s. Why can't I be the one who bring light to and, you know, create something new here? A lot of people shy away from that challenge and don't want that challenge. For me, I wanted that challenge. You know, same thing I did with college. I could have went to any big school, North Carolina, you know, all these schools. I could have came out East. I wanted to stay home. And instead of going to UCLA, let me go to SC. Nobody go here. Won a Pac-10 title there, first time there. You know, so I always been willing to go through the tough parts for a reward that'll be worth it, that I play a part in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and to have the opportunity, I remember when I came to Toronto, the whole stigma, nobody want to play in Toronto. Everybody hate Toronto. People want to leave Toronto. Nobody stick. I heard that my first couple of years of my career, and I hated it, and I wanted to change the mindset of that. Like, I wanted to show people it's not that bad. We could do this here. We could do this here. So for me, it means everything. It means everything to me, you know, because, you know, I remember watching Vince play. I remember being up early mornings when, you know, them 12:30 Eastern games come on at 9:30 at home, watching Vince. Couldn't wait to see what Vince did. And to sit here now and to hear all that stuff, it's that's why you go through the struggle, to, you know, hear things like that.
When Chris Bosh left after your rookie year, you tweeted out, I think, I got this, right?
Yeah, don't worry, I got this.
What were you trying to tell everybody?
I guess what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
I was a kid, you know. I'm not even gonna lie. I was 20 years old.
Looking back, did you have it? Did you really have it at that age, or did you?
No,
you knew you were going to.
I knew I was going to fight for it.
Yeah,
I was going to fight for it, and I looked at it more so like, this is my chance to fight for it. This is your chance. Don't let this moment go by when you could say, man, I wish I, you know what I mean? I see a lot of guys, you know, leave a certain situation, say, man, I wish I would have, it would have worked out. I could have, I never wanted to be that. You know what I mean? So I told myself when I tweeted that, I'm going to try like hell. So.
And you had a chance 2 years ago when you were in free agency, the Lakers had space. You know, you would have had to take less to leave. Does it just go back to you weren't done building something here? You felt like there was more to do here.
I felt like it was so much left. And to think about leaving off, coming up off of Eastern Conference Finals, you know, being two games away from going to the NBA Finals, you know, there's no way I couldn't do it. You know, that's why I didn't take no meetings. I wanted to get right back to business. Like, I dreaded that whole time where I couldn't just come out and say, man, I'm just coming back. You just leave me alone. I dreaded that whole season all the way up to July of me just wanting to say, man, I'm coming back. I don't know why people keep saying I'm doing this, I'm doing that.
So many guys love, like, I have found so many guys who've stayed. They love the attention that came with everyone recruiting them, them being talked about everywhere. And they were almost sad when they had to commit and sign because it ended sort of that
right.
process.
Yeah, yeah.
You weren't feeling any
of that. I was the opposite way. Cal, everybody close to me will tell you I hated it. I used to wake up in the morning saying, somebody said, you for sure going to the Lakers. I'm like, what? Like, who? Where's you getting this from? Like, I used to be so sick, but I couldn't just come out and say, man, I'm coming back. I don't care.
Because then you lose your leverage right. when you're you trying know, to you, get the dollar you need to
yeah,
get.
Yeah, you just lose right. everything. Yeah. So I sucked it up. It was, I think that time, I got off social media for like 2 months straight. Like, cause I couldn't take it no more. It was driving me crazy.
Or last year when you guys were in the playoffs and I talked to Kyle about just sort of LeBron and the Cavs just being in your way. And, you know, there was this whole generation of players who never got past Michael. Great players who didn't get past Jordan and the Bulls and go to the finals or win a championship. And you can look through this generation. He's kept a lot of guys out of the finals. Do you have to go to bed? I mean, listen, Boston's in front of you in the standings mm-hmm. now. But wherever Cleveland is, in the back of your mind, is there just a part of you that has to say, with all due respect to everybody else, you got to get through LeBron.
Yeah, you got to. All due respect. He earned that right to sit up there and say you have to go through him. You know, you have to get what you really want. You know, it's kind of like when you're a kid and you're playing them video games and you can't get to that final level because you on the hardest board. you're on the last one, but you struggling to get past the hardest, toughest players. It's kind of like that, but you know, you continue to play that game until you finally knock that one level off so you can get to where you got to go. You know, and that's the beauty of this game is them challenges. And as a true competitor, who wouldn't want that moment again if you had the opportunity to get back to that moment when you had previous times of doing it?
Because Kyle was out and injured, you have two All-Stars. One didn't play against the Cavs for most of the series last year. Was there an overreaction to you guys getting swept based on the fact that you just didn't have your guys against them?
Yeah, it was one of them tough ones where, you know, we definitely got killed for our performance, everything, you know. And we criticized ourselves real heavy, too. But we didn't make no excuses. You know, I told everybody walking away from that, remember this moment, remember this feeling. Because if we get back to this moment, first the same team, remember this feeling, because they didn't have this feeling when they walked away from this game, game four. We did. So we have to carry that same feeling over to understand if that's the edge that pushes over to win four games in a series. Let's keep that feeling, you know. So it's one of them to where, you know, you still could walk away from it with a positive and understand when you get back to that moment, we still got this feeling in our back pocket.
Is there a championship you've seen in maybe more recent or your adult life where that just – you think about your situation and how you've just piece by piece and kind of elevated it and in one place and gotten better and better, and you say, that looks like what I hope we can do. And the one I always think of with you is Dallas.
I was going to say that.
And Dirk. Yeah. Is that the one where you say, that's what I hope it looks like?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Because I remember watching that and you know, everybody picked and had Miami to win it. You know, and the way Dallas fought, the way Dirk stepped up big, that's exactly how you wanted to look. That's exactly how you want to be able to walk off that court, understanding you're a champion, off knocking off the team that was supposed to beat you, you know, for sure.
You never say never in the league, and change comes, but, you know, the way guys have gotten together and chased titles and the way super teams have formed, is it not for you? Has it just been you've liked better what you've had here? Does that pursuit in free agency, does it feel like it fits everyone? Does it fit you?
Nah, it's just not for everyone. You know, I never knock nobody for doing it. I never, you know, look down on nobody for doing it, you know. But, you know, it's just never been a thing that I put in my head to where, you know, where I had to think twice about it. You know, it's just one of them things where I just simply say, nah, not for me. Just not, you know, and I leave it at that. You know, I never think too deep into it or overreact like a lot of people do when they say, how you feel about this guy doing this? And like, man, as players, we have that option to do that, and we could do as we please if we're in that position. You know, just for me, I'm not.
If you think of things that are difficult in the league, to be strong enough in, like, your own conviction, a lot of guys, and you know, young players, they can follow, they just see somebody else is doing it, I'm going to do it because they're doing it. To sort of get to a point where you just say, this is what I'm about, these are my values, and I'm going to do it my way.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody finds that.
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, it's, no, everybody don't find that. You know, it's, you got to stick to whatever it is that you believe in, what you stand by. As a man, and you got to be willing to deal whatever comes with it, you know. And in my case, if that means a championship never comes with it, but I still firm in what I believed in, I got to accept that. I can't cry about it or complain about it, you know, and it could go the other way as well. So, you know, that's just me, my mindset, and that's why I never judge nobody else's decision when they do that, because, you know, if that's what they believe in and they feel best doing it, you got to respect it.
When you think of the guys, when you were young, the veteran players in the league come in that you were looking up to and how they were and how guys handled themselves on teams is, and then you get sort of at 28 and you look at the guys coming in now. Is there much of a difference from what it was when you came in to what the young guys are now? Does it look a lot different?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, a lot of young guys, which I was once a young guy, no, you think you know it all, but you don't know. You have no clue, you know, about nothing. You know, about the game, about, you know, life, about, you know, the ups and downs, the roller coasters. And being in this life for, you know, almost a decade now, teach you all that. Teach you everything. You know, for me, I was 19 when I was drafted. You know, I thought I had the world in the palm of my hands. You know, reality hits you so hard and so many times and knocks you down so many times to where it builds you up to be in the moments of when you're 28, you're resilient. You could go out there and win games. You could go out there and push your team to victory. You could do all the things that you thought you could do coming into the league, but you got to be built up for it.
The thing, too, it's funny, you always hear now, like with young guys, and I think a lot of it's people, can be people around them, is my brand, like my
right,
brand.
Yeah.
And it's like, you better have a game and worry about your game before you're, there's
exactly.
No brand without a game. And I think that's kind of been, to me, that is as big of a difference as somehow that you're, how you're marketing yourself versus before, because without the foundation of a game and staying power, it's all going
to
be gone fast.
Exactly. That go back to what I was saying earlier, to where, like, I never wanted to do anything else until I established myself on a basketball court.
Would you get like local endorsement things where you're like, hey, come here for a day, make a few bucks, and say, I can't? Like, would you turn things down early? That
yes. Because to me, it never made sense to, why are you asking me to do this? I haven't even scored more than 10 points in an NBA game. Or I haven't, you know, I haven't did anything. I have not did anything. Like, I want to lock in and put all my time and energy into my craft, because once I get that right, I get to pick and choose what I want from there. You know what I mean? Not hope, and come running when anything called for me, you know. So that's always been my mindset. And any young player that comes in the league that I have a conversation with, I try to tell them that as well. You know, whatever you do what you need to do on the court. The world be at the palm of your hand. You get to choose and pick whatever it is you want to do.
Yeah, you said the word, like, your craft.
Yeah.
And that, and whatever it is you do, but, like, it is boring, it's tedious, it's repetitive, right? But there's no shortcut to, like, perfecting your craft. And that's probably the most important lesson you have in being in the league, because it's the thing that sort of, like, you go back to every day.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, for sure. And that's what it is. That's why I get confused sometimes where, you know, you see certain players, they doing all type of other stuff other than basketball. And it's like, you know, I'm not knocking your hustle, but at the end of the day, you know, you got to step out there on the court with a guy who, like a Russell Westbrook, that don't give a damn you was just on Jimmy Kimmel doing an interview being funny. You know, he going to take your neck off. And if you're not ready, that's your fault, you know, and you know, it's hard to balance both sides when you're so young, you know, if you don't have your complete game right.
DeMar, I really appreciate this. It's a lot of fun, man.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to my guest today, Toronto Raptors All-Star DeMar DeRozan. Remember, you can subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes of the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can also hear the Woj Pod every Wednesday and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. We'll catch you next time.